Hello, and welcome to the 48th episode on Unlisted Wall. I'm Ben, and I'm joined by former Alcatraz prison tour guide, Charles, and today we're talking about The Rock and Con Air.
Welcome to the wall.
What do you have for me today, Charles?
Today, today's content is brought to you by my dumbass. I was kind of too young as a kid for when Nicolas Cage was first acting in pictures. He did some like low-key comedy stuff, and he hit it big with Moonstruck, I think. And was mostly in serious roles up through the early 90s. He finally, I think he was nominated for an Oscar before he actually won one, but he won for Leaving Las Vegas in 95. For Best Actor. And after that, he went on to just do like money making pictures. Like, it keeps coming back to Las Vegas with him for some reason. I wonder if that has anything to do with the reported money problems he's had. But after his Oscar, he started doing like mainstream, like blockbuster pictures for a little bit. And this is when he got like on my radar. So I'm still a teenager at this point. In 1996, there's this... I have no clue who Michael Bay is. I missed out on Bad Boys in 95, but... The Rock just seems like this big kind of... like, big deal movie. And that's about a month before I end up seeing Independence Day, which was the other really big one that summer. So that was kind of a good summer for movies for me. But for a few years there, he's just in these big budget pictures. Now, he's not an action hero in this first movie, which is where I think he works the best for him, even because you can see like the freak out cage, but you also have the try not to get flattened by everything going on around him in this first one. And also this might be the best ensemble cast around him that he's ever had. I'm not going to bet everything on that just yet, but the big cast in this one is amazing. You got Ed Harris as the quote unquote bad guy, who's he's a Marine general, isn't he? Anyhow, not to save it until the very end, but of course you got James Bond himself. Sean Connery is the big star here. At this point, Connery's still making movies and is still a huge star, even though he's getting old at this point. This is like 30 years
after him playing Bond. They have him do stuff in the movie where he like is holding his back and stuff when he's done like action stuff. It's funny.
Yeah.
When they're in the carts is.
He is just playing James Bond in this movie. Like, I don't know how they got him to agree to this when like, everything about the character he's playing is like, well, what if James Bond was in prison for 30 years and gets out and then has to help us out? It starts off with this immensely dramatic soldier infiltration where the bad soldiers under Ed Harris break into this installation to steal some chemical weapons. Big 80s hangover here in terms of like the way the action is, the way the shots are, and how super dramatic they want you to take this stuff. And it's even funnier where like all of the bad soldiers are firing like trank darts and beanbags at the guards they're overpowering to get to this stuff.
They go non-lethal into that first place, and I think it's kind of weird because they do end up, of course, blasting each other in the actual Alcatraz, but it's a weird take to have this terrorist threat be just Americans.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot of movies do that.
Oh, you 5 years after this, you would never have gotten anything like this off the ground. I mean, in 1996, we're sweet summer children still in the
right.
United States.
So that's what I'm saying. You have something that, I don't know if I've ever seen in another movie where the bad guy is just America itself.
Yeah.
Usually they always, nowadays, they point the finger at somebody else.
Yeah, they'll point the finger at the people that he's making fun
and
of.
And then I guess before this, it was the Ruskies that they pointed their finger. Like, you got the Wolverines and stuff like that.
Well, in the 80s, it's all about the Russians being the bad guy. And, you know, 30 years later, here it is again, where movies of this type, which are intend to be taken seriously, often feature, like, Russian bad guys. Because we kind of, you know, want to wash the taste out of, like, the brown people from the Middle East as the bad guys. Like, that's, you don't want to make that movie anymore, because it's like, we kind of made a mistake somewhere here along the lines. Like, we kind of messed up somewhere, but a few years after this movie comes out.
Here you have good old Americans.
Yeah.
Blasting the crap out of each other with beanbags.
With beanbags. You got the one guy who's like, he comes up from the bottom of the screen. He's got two, like, pistols in his hand. And he's like, got, like, a 1,000-yard stare on his face. Yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous.
So then they get these aqua balls that are dyed green.
Uh-huh.
And
it's a real chemical. Like, the substance in the movie, it doesn't do the stuff that they make out that it does, but it is an actual, like, substance. It doesn't melt skin, for one thing. I don't imagine, like, any amount of antidote being injected into your system would stop your skin melting.
I think there's a gas that does the back-breaking thing, I'm pretty sure. That's, like, a real nerve gas thing. Okay. That's a real thing, but now, what they like to do in movies, though, is they always got to raise the stakes by being like, if a drop of this gets in the atmosphere, it'll wipe out the whole planet. No. I'm like, well, okay. So, yeah. There's a limit to how much it could affect even aerosolized, but... And well, of course, they have it.
They don't give those kinds of stakes. Like, he intends to steal 16 of these weaponized.
I was a little bit of hyperbole there, but I'm saying.
And the idea is that it would kill several million people. But yeah, normally they go way higher, way more over the top nowadays when they.
But honestly, at what point does he need the 16? Right? Because, I mean, not to spoil anything, but at the end of the movie, he has two. And the threat is still there. Yeah,
spoiler alert, he intends to use zero. Right. But the idea being, they know when he conveys his demands to the White House, they know how many he stole and therefore know how much damage he could do.
I feel like that's not a nuke. It's really weird. Any other movie like this, he would have nukes.
Well,
they give this biological, it might have been a new thing at the time. Like, oh, it's got to be biological now.
Well, nukes is kind of a no way back from this kind of thing. Like, the response to the demands that are instigated by the character Ed Harris is playing, if it's nuclear, they're not going to negotiate. Like, him having some chemical weapons that could do some terrible things, but not, like, you know, glass the earth wherever he points the weapon at, like, I think if they're nuclear weapons, it kind of ruins the
vibe.
It ruins it a little bit, yeah. All in all, like, I know that the movie wants, and again, I'm a teenager at this point. I'm not wise enough to, like, be on to any of the bigger picture things going on here. But there are 81 hostages being held on the Alcatraz Island. They're not negotiating for 81 lives with the amount of, like, again, they have a fictional U.S. president here who's like, this is the hardest decision I've ever had to make. Like, well, I'm pretty sure U.S. presidents, like, even ones that you, whether or not you look at them as good, every last one of them is responsible for way more than 80 people dying, probably just in a given year. Like, they would have firebombed that island.
Even before they knew there was a threat.
Well,
so if there's 81 people there, we got to
Alcatraz no longer exists.
We got to lower the population a little bit.
It was shelled into the sea years ago. Nicolas Cage in this movie is an FBI chemical weapons specialist. Him and all of the people around him, the people he's teamed up with, there's some other kind of agent that we're shown them handling. Some other threat response that they're handling in-house.
Sarin gas.
Is it? Ah, that's right.
Out of the doll. Which the guy then picks up, whoa, look at this! And well, you know, they know there's something, like, toxic in there.
Don't yeah, like, these people, even, well, leaving Nicolas Cage out of it, these people don't seem like the ones I would want in charge of this sort of thing. And not only do they not seem, like, bright enough to be doing what they're doing, they also just immediately panic. And
oh yeah,
they're screaming at the top of their lungs like, this is not help. This is not going to resolve any situation in which these people are actually necessary. On the island itself, we are introduced to the soon to be hostages, which are being given a tour of the island, which I think even at the time this was made, that was no longer a thing. This was like a lot of stuff for this movie was just completely pulled out of thin air.
The tours still happen.
They happen now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, I went 5 years ago.
5 years ago? You've been to The Rock?
I've been to The Rock.
Did Ranger Bob walk you around? You
didn't know that I've been to The Rock?
Oh, that's how you know it's been destroyed.
Well, it's still been there. Standing, I guess it was more than 5 years ago at this point. I guess it's like 10. I was in high school at the time, so.
I think in the Marvel Universe, the X-Men were granted that island to build their own sort of home away from
home. I don't remember ever being in, like, the doors shut on you, but you can go in the cells. Like, I don't think they shut the doors on you, though. I feel like that would be...
Well, not after this movie came out. But these people are just like straight cartoon characters.
Honestly, the main attraction they have there is the guys who did escape from it. Because they say in the movie, oh, nobody escaped. It's like, well, they think people did because they did a Mythbusters episode on it.
I think people that were inmates there turned up missing, but they were never found.
Right.
So like... the assumption is like they didn't make it.
They either died or just hid so well after that they weren't found. But they have an escape was definitely attempted because they have in the cells where it happened.
Well, Clint Eastwood was in a movie about that, I believe.
Yeah, it's called Escape from Alcatraz.
Is it now? I thought it was Birdman of Alcatraz.
They have no.
No.
They have the paper mache heads redone. So that's what they did. They made paper mache heads to replace their
actual heads.
They would look like they were sleeping there. And they...
Did they use like rock hammers to slowly chisel their way out through the wall?
No, they used spoons.
Oh, that's another prison I'm thinking of.
They used spoons to get through a bottom part of the wall, which they had a replacement like cardboard socket for. So it covered it. So they had basically all night where nobody noticed they were gone. And that's how they built
head start.
They built the raft out of rain jackets. And it's like a triangle. They did it in Mythbusters. And like you could
it actually worked.
Conceivably do it. Like because they rode to San Francisco in this boat.
Shout out to Mythbusters. They've been a very nice like shoulder for us to lean on at certain points.
Yeah, that's because they were on a while. And they tested a lot of stuff that happens in movies. Because that's what most of the myths were after the first season. Was like, oh, is this movie possible?
I remember watching the episode where they put like the gas canister, not into an actual shark's mouth, but they saw if they were shooting a rifle at it to see if it would explode. I remember that episode.
Anyway, the coolest part beyond seeing the set up escape versions was the solitary confinement, which are just blacked out rooms. Like they have no windows.
It's torture. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's a recording. You go through Alcatraz with headphones on and it like walks you through the building and like tells you this stuff. It's like having a tour guide, but it's just with you and at your pace.
I take it you stayed in San Francisco. You didn't just like fly out and stay the night in Alcatraz.
No, it was all of the stuff in San Francisco. Like we were there for a week. One of the days was Alcatraz.
I'd like to go there one day, but I don't think I have enough money in my account ever will in order to be able to.
It's cold and sad.
Cold.
And sad. As Mark Twain said, the coldest winter you ever weathered was a summer in San Francisco. It like never gets like 48. It's like always 45 degrees or below.
You think you're like describing a place I never want to go. I'm liking it more. The more every word out of your mouth
cold.
Is like, I need to go.
It like never gets above like 50. It's wild.
I love it. I love it.
Anyway, in the solitary confinement, the guy on the little recording said what he did for entertainment was he took a button off his uniform and would throw it in the room and then try
to find it
in the dark.
Jesus Christ.
That's what he did.
How long did they keep people in there?
I don't know. Can't remember. But the...
Well, I guess...
It's not good for you to be just in permanent darkness.
Because it's torture.
They used to do things different back in the day.
Well, not all that different from nowadays.
Anyway, I've been to Alcatraz, and there's no... I don't think there's any underground... The amount of underground stuff that they were going through, like, I think that was a little bit... They're just like bunkers. There's nothing under them, I don't think. If anything's under him, it's like plumbing.
No, like fiery contraptions. No,
I don't know what that was. What was it supposed to be?
They said later in the movie what it was supposed to be, and by that point, I'm like, oh.
There was like these mining carts going, and I'm like, what is all this stuff supposed to be?
Temple of Doom stuff, but it's like that was not the Indiana Jones movie that Connery was in. I don't know.
It's a prison. It's not. It doesn't have like a vast underground network. It was also an underground
quarry.
And what?
Yeah, it was like even in 96, I'm like, I would know about all this bullshit if any of this was even remotely related to stuff that was real.
Oh, the other cool thing is the mice there are the color of concrete.
What?
They blend into concrete. Instead of like dirt, they're like light yellow mice because that shields them from predators because they look like the concrete. It's wild.
So you say predators, and like while I'm thinking of this, it's like, oh... So, like, with their little tri-dot tracking system, can't find these mice.
Yeah, they're hawks with, like, that kind of vision. And they go like this.
So, Ed Harris is, he's giving his best when he call, like, he's giving the material, like, his undivided attention. Oh, he's trying to sell it. Like, he's in a different move. I mean, like, the best villains are the ones who play it straight.
He always acts like that, though.
This material isn't great, but he is giving it his best, and he's convinced. He's probably my favorite character in the movie.
I don't know. Michael Biehn's pretty cool.
We don't get enough of him. We'll get there in a second. So his demands for the United States are for recognition of the Spec Ops soldiers who have been killed in action and because of what they were doing were never allowed to be acknowledged, and their families received no compensation. So he hits up the White House and demands $100 million.
A drop in the bucket.
That was now in 1996. $100 million as today was a lot of money.
I've probably paid that much in taxes by now.
But it's cheap for what the situation was. Granted, just allow the movie to be as dumb as you want it. They're not gonna give him the money. But at the same time, like they pissed that money away just in a week nowadays. It's not even asking for a lot because only
I'm sure they 80 lose
some of it was going to actually go to the families of the fallen soldiers.
I'm sure they lose that amount of money these days, like just randomly. Like, oh, yeah. Oh, we lost that $100 million you gave us. It's like, oh, cool.
We lost. Yeah, misplaced. I can't help but thinking, though, nowadays you would have to at least consider giving him the money. That leads right into the White House's response. They say, like, oh, well, give us time. We'll see about the money. Yeah, because they can't find $100 million laying around.
Maybe they did lock us in, because here's me and Alcatraz.
Wow. I'll put that on Twitter.
Well, they definitely let you in the cell, so I don't know if they closed the doors.
Huh.
Here's one of the paper mache heads.
No kidding.
Sorry, we don't have a visual component, but I'm showing Charles pictures.
I'm glad you have the pictures. I'm getting a lot out of it. So Michael Biehn, poor Mike Biehn, at this point in his career, I think he'd been pigeonholed. I really wish he was in more of this movie. Wow, look at that. It's wonderful to see him again, although, again, at this point, the only thing they bring him out of wherever they're keeping him to do is play a Navy SEAL or Marine officer of some kind.
Wasted talent. I don't know. He plays it so well, though. Maybe he's typecast. Yes, I guess.
Well, he is typecast. It's just like he's a good actor.
And he looks like he's having fun.
Yeah, I saw him. He did a solo panel about five years or so ago in DC.
Pre-Mandalorian, unfortunately.
Yeah, pre-Mandalorian. But, you know, he was just chill. It was almost like having a conversation with him like we're doing, except he was doing it with the room. I'd love the chance to actually meet him again. I have some questions for him. But anyway.
Did the acid hurt?
Oh, I've told you this story before. he is the leader of the response team that will be bringing Nicolas Cage. And along with the SEAL team, there'll be another a guest they'll be bringing along, since they don't know how to get into the building. One thing about this movie I like, I mean, there's more than one thing, but one of the things I like about this movie.
Like one thing about the movie.
Well, like, the Nick has his moments of insanity in this movie, but this movie harnesses it the best because everybody in the movie is put off by it. Like, they're not, like, intimidated by it, but everyone's just like, will you shut up? Knock it off. And that is the best way to respond to it.
They said they didn't do it the way I wanted to, but they say, when he's like, oh, Sean Connery's got a gun. He doesn't say Sean Connery's got a gun.
He's John, like, Mason.
What do you have? A water pistol? All I could think was, what do you have? A Cuisinart. Cuisinart. Like, and they said that line. That would be way better.
Connery plays John Mason instead of James Bond. They should have just kept the initials JB. He's an old SAS officer that was apprehended because he did a no-no in the United States in the 60s, and he was held without trial, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, they made him disappear. They treat him like the boogeyman. He's
Baba Yaga.
Wait, that's you a different know movie. Baba Yaga?
You stole his car?
The government is just hand-wringing endlessly over the hostage situation. Like, this is complete bullshit, but they want to negotiate with Mason to have him escort their response team into Alcatraz, since he, being a prisoner there, escaped from it and was later caught again. A lot of contrivance there to make the character necessary.
Did he escape or not?
Yeah. Me personally, I think it's the best Connery ever looked, because they gave him, like, this long, flowing white mane of a wig. I don't know why they're in such a hurry to get it off of him. One of his demands to cooperate with the feds is to have a room at an expensive hotel where he gets his haircut, gets a shave.
After he puts his suit on, which is a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Huge mistake. Never do that, because it ruins whatever you're wearing if you get a haircut like that.
Yeah.
Gets hair all down.
The
suit's already not that comfortable.
I don't trust someone like Bay to be aware of that kind of thing. There's a sequence after that where Connery escapes. They have a big chase scene in downtown San Fran with, like, the famous cars going over hills. And the reason he's done that is to break out and see his daughter, who is definitely should be his granddaughter. Going
also,
by ages.
This part of the movie has the biggest transgression that I've seen yet.
Oh, let me hear it.
The Ferrari is yellow. Who buys a yellow Ferrari?
I wasn't even sure it was a Ferrari because it wasn't red.
Because it was yellow. Okay, now I know. I've been on the Ferrari website.
Well, that was one they probably sold for cheap because they couldn't sell it to anybody else because nobody wants a yellow Ferrari.
And they do destroy it. So
They destroy it good.
This is pre-CGI being cheap. So it's like, well, let's just destroy the Ferrari.
Yeah, and half of San Francisco as well.
I've been on the Ferrari website, and you can adjust the color of your Ferrari to whatever you want.
Except for yellow.
The yellow's on there, but why would you ever do that? There's a whole, every palette of red you can imagine.
Spend that money.
I mean, they cost like $250,000, like, basement level.
You have questionable tastes when it comes to shades of red, so I don't know.
I get my Ferrari in crucible vermilion?
No, I would not get one black, because if you're going to spend that money, why do you want to cover the car up with a black paint job? But yeah,
they even name drop. So, like, right before the name drop it, they zoom in on the steering wheel and you can finally see, like, the stallion. It's like, oh, it's a Ferrari.
Yeah,
but then, like, 2 seconds later, it's like, dude, you wrecked your Ferrari. It's like, oh, it was a Ferrari.
Well, Nick doesn't care about that because it wasn't mine.
And then he steals
the guy's bike. Another movie with him on a bicycle. This chase sequence, it derails the movie for a good 15 minutes.
It's a big chunk of the movie.
It's a big chunk.
Just for him to
I don't even remember it taking that long for them to get to the island. And just for him to have a scene with his daughter, like, I don't know. Maybe this was one of his conditions for doing the movie. I have no idea.
Couldn't he have just said, like, hey, can I call this girl?
Yeah.
Instead of like destroying all that property.
Well, he hasn't met her. The character, the two have not met in person at this point.
I had a picture of you when you were 10.
So I can see why he would want to talk to her in person.
That's true. Well, that could have been a request. Like, wouldn't they have honored that? It's not going to hurt his daughter.
They gave him everything else he asked
for. Right. He asked for like a hotel and like a haircut. He hangs the guy by his arm.
Although yeah, that guy's a real prick. Or as he says, after he somehow uses a quarter with an edge stomped into it to like cut a hole in one-way glass. Yeah, that doesn't work. But he leans in through the broken glass and says, "You piece of shit." Probably my favorite part of the movie. This chase sequence is really long.
Your arm broken like that? Or it's like it's around your wrist and the force of your own body weight breaks your arm. Ow.
Ow. Yeah, Ow is right.
That wouldn't feel good. Sorry, that part of the movie bothered me because it was a... First off, don't let anybody throw you like that. Okay? Like,
especially not Sean Connery.
It's an old man. I know they're both old men, but it's pretty easy to stop someone from throwing you over them over the edge of the railing.
Well, he's got old man strength.
But they both do, though, so you think it should cancel out.
Well, but the FBI guy is a piece of shit, so he doesn't have old man strength.
He might have been pushing too many pencils.
Well, he was FBI, not CIA.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, we're talking about a different movie again. This chase sequence is quite long. It's actually not that bad. The problem is, this was before The Bourne Identity. For some reason, that half the time the sequence is being done with massive shaky cam, which I didn't have the taste in film at the time for it to know how much it was.
I feel like I've seen a supercut of just Nicolas Cage steering. I feel like I've seen that.
Well, occasionally he'll lean down and change gears because like that's a requisite for chase sequences.
It's funny because you know when they're filming that part, it's this car is just sitting still, which makes it hilarious.
But like shaky cam is questionable on its face. Like it can in some instances be used appropriately in an action movie, not during a car chase.
Honestly, the only time I think shaky cam is appropriate, and even then I still puke in my shorts occasionally, is found footage movies. Like, okay, it makes sense. Well, it's a camcorder
within the boundaries of that conceit.
But
yeah.
I really don't want to see it in any other movie. Like, put the thing on a rail and let me not puke.
Well, if you're gonna do it, you know, don't do it. But if you're gonna do it, don't do it for a car chase. What the hell is wrong with you? Oh my god, awful choice. Anyway, normally Bay's better about that. Like normally, it's just he uses slow motion instead of shaky cam.
Oh, I thought he just used gasoline barrels all bolted together.
He may have scripted that from John Woo.
I was gonna make fun of you. You were playing Resident Evil 8.
Oh, for shooting the red barrels.
I was laughing because I'm like, why is it so synonymous in video games that like this red barrel is like an explosive weapon?
Well,
like it's in all kinds of games and it's just like assumed knowledge. Like I can remember all the way back to like Half-Life 2. Half-Life 1 has them. Half-Life 1's from the 90s.
Well, I think it originally comes from cinema. I think they're took
like, red barrels blow up.
Well, because they're full of flammable materials, which then make a massive explosion. It's a trope that's not true, but we all believe it.
You know, every time you say the word explosion, Michael Bay makes 5 cents. He's got a copyright.
I don't know if you're kidding.
He has a copyright on the word explosion.
One of the things wrecked during this shaky cam car chase is a cable car or a trolley car. I'm sorry.
I honestly don't think a Hummer ramming one of those would knock it off the tracks. Maybe it would. I don't know.
Well, you were there. You didn't take the opportunity to try it out.
We rode on a cable car like that.
Yeah.
They're silly.
They're silly.
But...
Well, I was right there with the guy who somehow survived all of it. We don't see him get off the cable car, but he's there at the end like, they wrecked my baby. But yeah, he's like, I'll hunt him down. I'll kill him.
It's just hard to believe that the entire point of this part is like he just goes see his daughter.
But afterward, he's
how much destruction of property that was for no reason.
For no reason. Yeah, just because it's Michael Bay.
Okay, like all the stuff on Alcatraz, people shooting each other. And, you know, that's cool. Like they're. Actually, that's the mission, whatever.
Yeah. Never mind all the fantastic Hollywood talent you're working with in this movie, Michael Bay. He's like, well, I'll do it if I get to do a car chase where I pull down half the city.
So anyway, they do eventually get to the island.
Yes, he takes them in, or they use
Nicolas Cage ends up going, Sean Connery ends up going.
They use the cool submersibles that get them in.
Both of them get told, you're not going to go in there, and then, of course, they're the last two alive, so it's okay. Well, it's a good thing they went in.
Yes. He gets them to the underbelly of the place. Then Mason proceeds to...
I've memorized the pattern.
Yeah, he goes
really,
in there.
Of flamethrowers, you know how to roll through those just by looking at it.
Well, if I'm not sure you're aware of this. I'm pretty sure you're not familiar with the material, but the penitent man will pass. He gets in, goes to the other side, like video game style. He sneaks in through the opening, comes to the other side of the locked
door. This door is locked from the other side. Well, shit, man. Why didn't we come in the other
side? Contraption does not move.
Is this the only place we can come in from the water?
Absolutely.
And why would he have to roll through while escaping if the door was locked from that side?
Well, he could have asked up front for a flame retardant suit. But we...
This leads to Bean and crew getting
absolutely this team of,
slaughtered.
Well, like another movie
Obi-Wan
he's
style.
Well known for, another team of soldiers gets sent unawares into a situation they're not prepared for. And this time, Corporal Hicks's luck runs out. There's a big standoff scene, and not a single enemy Marine is taken out. So... I have it in my notes here. I knew you would appreciate it. At least in this movie, it does make sense why the high ground bestows victory. I can actually see why being in, being in an elevated position would...
I mean, the general warns him. And if you think about it, you ever played...
Oh, and Bean's character knows it, too. He's like, yeah, we're going to get shot to pieces, but if I stand down, then...
What's the point of even being here?
Yeah, I'm not going to be added to the list of hostages and et cetera. Instead, they all die.
It's true in video games, too. A little bit more severely, because in video games, you're actually shooting from the top of your head. But
well, in this movie, it makes sense why the high ground works, as opposed to simply another melee combatant stepping off and walking up to the same level of ground that the opponent is on. we'll talk about that again sometime.
You underestimate Michael Biehn's power, okay?
Not in this movie, sadly.
He
does work his way into the Star Wars.
They get obliterated, and then the general's like, "Well, I didn't really want to obliterate him."
Yeah, it's been established at this point he doesn't want to kill anybody. He just doesn't like bullies. So they start hunting for these missiles,
right? And it's just the two of them now. Who Sean Connery then decides to keep helping because.
He at numerous points, they've withheld the information from Connery's character that they are in possession of this cache of chemical weapons, which could kill everyone in the city. He eventually does find out and still has these moments where he's just going to walk away. Right. It's like, well, your daughter's in the city. She'll probably die.
But then what I think is the funniest part of the movie, they get this renowned specialist with biological weapons, right, to dismantle these things.
Who loves the Beatles? It was important that.
And they don't even play an actual Beatles song there.
Nope.
It's like a ripoff.
They're not
going to
pay
song.
That licensing. Well, no, they play Elton John.
That's not the Beatles.
Early
man.
In the movie, when he's with his girlfriend, who becomes
I know they're
his
expensive,
fiance.
But still.
Well, I mean, they can't be more expensive than a $600 LP.
That thing was sealed.
Oh, was it?
My dad has one of those. Meet the Beatles. Sealed.
Well, in 96 it was worth $600 apparently.
Or maybe it might not be in plastic anymore. It's in good shape though. Anyway, he's this world renowned biological weapons expert.
He's a top of his class type genius
need you to disarm these.
At least competent, which is more than you can say for the other federal agents that we see.
Which the disarming accounts to a quarter left turn twist, lifting a pipe out and then pulling a chip out of the thing. There's no explanation
why the guidance chip is attached to the weapon, or attached to the chemicals. It should be attached to something in the missile, right?
Also, they call them rockets, and then they steer it after it's launched. I'm like, isn't that a fundamental difference between a rocket and a missile?
Like a dumpfire.
It's like you let her go and the rocket goes. Now you can probably aim it where it's going to land, but once she's gone, she's going.
Yeah, you can't just use a keyboard to turn the steering wheel and redirect it. That's not a rocket.
They don't know that we missed on purpose.
It's a guided missile.
It's So we only have one left.
Well, off camera, when they first find some of these missiles, he gets rid of one of the missiles. Was mishandled during the acquisition at the military installation.
So we got to watch a guy get melted.
Yeah, so we can see. And this is expressly so we can see what they can do. So Nick is able to disarm 12 of them before they're found out.
Which we see like one or two of, and then it's like
we see him,
three more to
we
go.
See him going it's at like, one, and then
it's
when
part
it cuts,
of that, did it skip on the DVD?
Yeah, it comes back, and he's finishing up number 12, I guess. So three to go. They get apprehended and put in a cell. We get a little bit of how Mason initially got out of his cell, which, since you weren't actually locked in one, at least to the best of your recollection,
I can't remember if that's how they worked or not. But they would be electronic, wouldn't they? And I don't know
in
the power.
'60s.
I guess they all opened at once. I think when you pulled the lever. So
yeah,
I don't know.
It seems like each door had an individual.
It's been a
catch,
long but time since, because I looked it up when I was showing you those pictures. I was there in 2010, so it's been 11 years.
Oh.
I was in high school. And I can't remember the door. I don't remember seeing the door.
In
96,
I was just out of high school.
I was actually on the rock.
But though, you were in the rock.
You got to take a boat. It's cool.
I wouldn't mind. Yeah, in Book of Eli, he takes a boat.
Yeah, you
got to
take
a
boat
out
there
to the,
that's why it's in all the movies, because it's like this weirdly developed island right next to like city. It's a very convenient location.
I wonder how many more of our movie are.
Like you said, X-Men, they go there and like...
Well, not in the movies, but... Yeah.
I'm just saying people use it in stories all the time. And I'm like, okay, there's more
it's like
islands
a mythical
than just
place.
Alcatraz.
No.
And it's not even that great. I think they use it because it's self-contained. It's basically like a city, a little tiny city. Because it has, you know, like a kitchen and I'm sure like a medical area. And
it's self-sustaining
right.
capable. Yeah.
I think hippies grew plants there at one point.
Doesn't sound bad to me. Okay, so Nick convinces Mason to stay after another bout of "I'm out of here. I'm going to leave." And he goes back. They find another one of the Oh no, this is before they get caught. This is when Mason goes and creates a distraction by turning himself into Ed Harris, and a couple of the Harris's enemy soldiers just become like have supernatural ability at this point because they do some Spider-Man shit to get the drop on him while he's. And I can't help but think like, yeah, it's meant to be this spiffy like action beat thing because they come down and just spook him while he's like interacting with a deadly chemical weapon. I can't help but think this is the second time in the movie where I'm thinking like,
but he why? Does disarm that one, doesn't he? Because then there's only the one left. Oh, no, they shoot two. Never mind.
Yeah.
They shoot one that goes in the ocean, and then he disarms them. Yeah.
But why instead of doing like this like Sam Fisher shit, why didn't they just like drop him? Because like they...
Well, shoot him then.
Like Harris, have a reason. Harris doesn't want any unnecessary casualties, but a lot of the people serving under him
they're pretty ramped up.
They don't give a shit. So we're moving now to the showdown.
The Mexican standoff at the end?
The Mexican standoff is really over the top.
It's like, it's been an honor serving with you, and shoots another person.
Yeah,
and
so
then Sean Connery's shooting in there.
Two of the officers under Ed Harris's command, which are to me look like army officers because they don't... they answer to the term soldier, which it's my understanding, like Marines don't stand for that. But they also have berets that they... wear when they're being all extra serious. One of them's Tony Todd. That's a Candyman for you horror fans out there. He also played Worf's brother on Star Trek. Really, really fun actor to see. It's a pleasure to see. He goes out like a champ in the movie because he's the Rocket Man.
He gets gored.
Yeah. But yeah, the last little bits of the enemy combatants are whittled away. And, like, there's one on the roof who's, like, has to create some tension at the end because he's trying to snipe with a heavy machine gun and then actually gets a sniper rifle when that doesn't work out.
And then gets beaten to death with his own machine gun.
That's right. That's what happens. I remember, like, Connery just...
Then he falls off.
But... Yeah. because you got to fall. The Air Force planes at this point are
coming in hot.
They're going to blow up the whole island, which is honestly, that's the call the government would have made initially.
The first day.
Supposedly these weapons can't be neutralized by burning them. Like the early on in the movie, one of the military figures who's with the talking heads in the White House trying to figure out a response is like, no, it's resistant to napalm. You can't burn it up that way. And then later their plan is to use napalm mixed with thermite or something like that.
Get that temperature up a little bit.
But that's like to destroy it when it's in the atmosphere. If you just blow up the island, it's not, I don't know.
I do love the one guy.
It's a very silly 80s action movie that just happens to be like years later in the 90s.
The one guy who gets his ball, like the ball just put in his mouth. I'm like, oh, that's got, that can't oh, be yeah. good for you.
He like puts it in there and just like
also, I knew that when we saw
closed.
The,
oof.
First of all, I don't know if.
Bad way to go.
You're supposed to have somebody else inject your heart, right? Not do it yourself.
Well, you're not really supposed to do like in stabbing yourself in the heart with a needle. And they have an earlier sequence in the movie where like, oh God, this is, and Nick Cage is selling it very well. Like he's like, get that thing the fuck away from me. I will not be doing this. It's like a delicate procedure, not something you could do in the field, especially not under, I don't know.
Also, he misses, by the way.
And he misses.
He's like, he's down here. I'm like, okay, that's not your heart, my boy.
Well, I think you would have to get it down there, but angle it upwards to in order to...
Get through some rib action.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's pretty clumsy in the movie. And again, the stuff is supposed to, like, it might as well be xenomorph blood. Like, no amount of antidote injected into you is going to stop your skin from melting, at least the way, you know, my...
But then he gets his green flares out.
Yeah, he has like a Die Hard
green
2
flare.
Moment there. Green flare.
Oh, I already launched my payload. Oh, I did too. Whole island just burns up. That's the end of the movie.
Yeah, like it looks from the air, it looks like the whole island goes up. But apparently, you know, we never see any of the hostages again after a certain point in the movie. But it's...
You know one of the greatest advantages of modern aircraft, even in the 90s?
Nick is like blown clear off the island, apparently by a wire that for some reason they left in the camera shot.
One of the greatest advantages of modern aircraft is that they don't have to get very close to their targets to engage. That's the point, right? If you're launching ordnance or something. So I don't think they would fly at like building level in San Francisco right across the bay and
then launch right...
10 feet from the island at the last second. Like they would have launched it 3 miles out and it would have hit with a missile strike.
But don't tell Michael Bay that. You're going to ruin his movie.
I'm like, this doesn't look legit. Are those Tomcats? I don't know what those were.
They appeared to be. Well, wait. Those are F-14s, right?
I don't know my fighter planes.
I believe
well.
Those were F-16s, but I could be completely mistaken.
Those are Falcons. F-16 Falcons.
Is that the...
I thought they had more like swept wings. I know the F-18.
They look like Decepticons
engines.
To me. That's all.
Two engines. Starscream.
Oh, wait. Michael Bay did that movie, too.
Wonder how many people who fly those... That's a Raptor. That's an F-22 Raptor. Starscream, isn't it?
In
the new one.
Yes.
Wonder how many F-22 pilots have named their Raptor Starscream. How many do you want to bet?
Well, maybe like not name the plane, but had that on their pilot's helmet.
That would be sweet, dude.
Who knows?
I mean, if I was a trucker, you can bet your ass I'd be driving Optimus Prime.
I might be driving the Pork Chop Express myself, but you can't go wrong with Optimus Prime.
Oh, and if I was an ice cream truck driver...
Please don't tell me you want to do those movies at some point.
Well, they're already on the list.
No.
Right after Jurassic Park.
Well, at least we'll go out on a high note if it's just Bumblebee. That's the latest movie.
We got to do bad movies. I mean, these are kind of bad. These are mediocre movies.
Well, for its day, The Rock was pretty
solid. To be fair... I'm
like,
going to compare it to
in
something.
1996, I, as an action film mega fan, you know, a teenage boy with a head full of nonsense, I had been, like, after the 80s sputtered out, like, you know, Schwarzenegger's last big one is Terminator 2. It's been 5 years at this point since you've gotten consistently, like, big action movies with big stars. You know, Van Damme at this point is sputtering out. Seagal is crap from the beginning at this point. I think he's got like one solid movie left in him. Like action movies are kind of ending and this one comes along and it's fairly good. Yeah. This is probably the best one of the three, but it depends on your own taste, sensibilities.
Oh, I forgot what I was going to say because I got a big distraction.
Uh-oh.
Compare this to the later Halloweens where I sped them up to 1.5 times because I was going to shoot myself. I did not do that with these. I sat there contentedly, watched Nick Cage do his thing, and I was like, I'm fine sitting here watching these. Admittedly, some of them have some age on them, so they aren't...
Generally, movies from the mid to late 90s, they haven't aged well, at least from a visual standpoint, and from a writing standpoint, like, wow, this was good enough at one point. I mean, if you go back and look at, say, like Batman comics from like the 70s or 60s or whatever, like, yeah, this was the standard. You wouldn't get away with this shit now, right. But you can still see how it was fine for the time.
Anyway, Nick Cage saves the day.
He does.
And they pretend that Sean Connery's dead.
And he fucks the prom queen.
He gets out of there.
And yes, because of the explosion, Nick is able to sell the lie that Mason was vaporized.
Does that happen to people?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all the time.
Definitely.
Nothing left.
And he gets to find out who killed JFK, and, you know, he gets to see evidence of the aliens.
Steals that guy's pew leg. Terrible.
Yeah. You vandal! That's kind of funny.
I thought that was a weird thing to put at the end of the movie.
It is. It is weird.
It's like, does he need that stuff? Like, who cares?
No, that's just, yeah. I don't know. I don't know who's responsible for it. I guess that's the way you want to end it for you have your just married bit. You want to go to Kansas, not Maui.
Well, I'm just, hopefully Sean Connery never had, like, magnetic boots holding him to the floor.
Oh, God. Not this week. We'll get there next week.
What's okay. The next movie we're looking
well,
at?
Well, the reason I picked the three movies that I did was because, one, these were my proper introduction to Nicolas Cage, and they also came out just over a year inside of, like, The Rock was June of 96, Con Air was June, I think, of 97, and then Face Off was July of 97. These movies came out very, very close together, and I kind of think of them... Again, not as one movie like Next to Knowing, but these are the three movies
we found out are different movies.
We found out
the same movie. We've
documented the proof.
Statistically proven.
It's been peer reviewed.
Two different films.
We will. Our publishing is pending, but we've ascertained it. We've scientifically proven it. But when I think of Nicolas Cage in a non-meme fashion, I think of these three movies. But the next one that came out,
Con Air.
This one, another big ensemble, but instead of like big macho soldier types in this movie, he's surrounded by big evil convict types.
John Malkovich's.
Now that John Malkovich is great in this movie, I don't care what anybody says.
He's in Bird Box.
Bird Box.
That's that Netflix sensation that's not really that good.
Is that the one with Sandra Bullock?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was in
that. He's in that. He's the crazy... He's not a crazy guy. He's like the dick in that. He's okay. Pretty much always the dick in the movie.
Well, yeah.
Like, this is who he is.
I mean, if you do it that well, like if I had a movie and I wanted a character like that, that's the person I'd ask to get first. The best thing about this movie, though, and again, it puzzled me for years because I think you had said something to this shortly before we sat down to record. It's amazing how anyone took this seriously. Cause I like everything about this movie except him. And it's not really that he's bad in the movie, but they're having him play a Southern character.
So bad.
And his accent is so, I mean, for 1997, I don't know how this happens.
Like, just have him talk like normal. Nick Cage has enough against him as it is.
About 5 years before this, like we keep coming back around the merry-go-round, like the carousel, I should say, to Keanu Reeves for some reason. But about 5 years before this,
love me some Keanu.
He's Jonathan Harker in the Dracula, as played by Gary Oldman, several years before this. And it's just, it's a big deal. Like, it was a Hollywood meme at the time that like his accent in that movie is like, how did this clear? Like, how did the studio say like, this is okay?
This is good enough.
And then 5 years later, you have something similar in a much less serious movie, admittedly. But like, he's doing this. I think he's supposed to be from Alabama. Yeah, Alabama, I think. Alabama? Missouri? He's super Southern. or he's supposed to be. And it's awful. It is awful.
I don't like how he gets his plea bargain. It's like, oh, 4 years he'll be in there for one. He ends up being there for like eight. It's like, okay.
Well, number maybe one.
He should have not pled guilty.
I don't know. Well, for one, the entire thing is a sham. Like, they dress it up where he is supposed to be, before he went into the army, he was supposed to be this guy that, kind of like Marty McFly, if you call him a chicken, well, all of his reason goes out the window. Well, no, like, he can't back down from a situation that's escalating into a fight. And for some reason, like, every bar in America, or at least the ones in the Southern persuasion, like, ever, they're just filled with assholes who can't wait to start a fight with somebody for, like, completely, like, evil reasons.
Come have a drink with us.
Yeah, so
usually you don't walk up to someone who's actively dancing with someone else and ask them to come get a drink with you.
No,
like, I've never done that. I don't know. I don't do a lot of clubbing, but...
Well, like, number one, nowadays, nobody tries to start a fight like that with somebody in a uniform.
Right.
Just because, like, there's this patina of respect where you don't treat people like that. And, you know, maybe it's because it's Nicolas Cage, but they haven't heard him speak. They haven't heard him trying to do that Southern accent. So there's no reason for them to pick a fight with him. And number two, if they are doing that, like, you just lean, like, I don't care if they're paying customers or not. Like, the owner's going to have them kicked out.
Right.
Maybe not at that particular watering hole in the South. I think it is Alabama, because for some reason it's called a bar, but it's my understanding in that state, you're not allowed to use that term. It has to be like a club or something like that instead. But
to my knowledge, I've never been to Alabama.
To your knowledge, huh?
I could have driven through it at some point. You know, it always gets confusing.
Well, yeah, I don't think I've ever been that far south. But his accent, it is so bad that it's gone beyond, it's like gone through the black hole and come out the other side.
Slips
so
through.
It does not insult, like, me. You know, like, I've never, you know, my
it seems like parody.
My family history, like, puts me in generally in that quadrant of the country, but I think everybody wins here because it's so awful. And again, like, he at least in this movie, he's kind of the most important character. But as far as how he gets tried and convicted for defending himself, and the way the judge says is, because of your military training, you're not allowed to appropriately defend yourself when multiple people are assailing you with, like, a knife or whatever. So, like, that's how they say it's like, well, now we're going to throw the book at you. That's not the way the law works. Like, there's no state where that actually works that way. It does. You do have to make it known that you possess that kind of training. Like, you're registered as, like, the old trope, your fists are registered as deadly weapons, whatever. Doesn't mean that you can't defend yourself. Right. So, like, that whole idea of him getting sent to prison for that is complete bullshit. But again,
but they had it's to make not it as so big of like, a... It had to be like, he shouldn't have gone to prison.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get to see his daughter.
But they do make it out like it's his fault. You know, like, well, he never should have been in that... Well, like, the fight was brought to him. He did nothing to make that fight happen except for not shut the door of the car and start it and drive away.
And like, talk at them with that horrendous accent. I would have slapped him too.
Yeah, you could call that provocation, I guess.
Anyway, so the premise here is he's finishing up. I love the prison montage because there's like a riot and he's just like sitting in his room.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just laying on his cot. Apparently, like, he talks about in his letters to his daughter who's now born, that he met somebody and made a friend out of Bubba Gump.
With a snowball. With a snowball. If I'm in prison, you give me a snowball, I'll kill you.
But
I hate those. You're going to get shanked right there.
The pink one. They make them, they're not just pink, right? I think I have eaten those before, but they come in chocolate.
Snowballs?
I think so. They're not the
I've
worst.
I've only seen the pink ones, but I don't know if there's more than that.
Well, anyway,
or by Hostess,
I'll eat one. It's not my favorite, but so we get
not the taste, the consistency.
So it's what, seven year or 8 years? No,
it's eight. I think is how much he serves.
Yeah. Also, he's in federal prison, And they don't do parole in federal prison anymore. So he shouldn't be up for anyway.
He shouldn't be in prison, though. So, I mean, you know, while we're breaking the rules.
Fair enough. He gets his ticket. And he's like, yeah, you're going to... And his cellmate is being transferred, I think.
So
they're both going to be on this plane that's carrying a bunch of convicts.
I've never been to prison, Charles, but...
Well, what do you want to know?
Why would they ship him on... Like, wouldn't they just let him go and he would get, like, non-prisoner transport to home?
Remember, he shouldn't have been in prison in the first place, so they can bend whatever.
Why'd they put him on, like, the transfer plane, cool, whatever, like, that's locked down and they're moving prisoners. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Why is someone they're letting out on that plane?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well, nothing's going to go wrong on the flight. I mean, it's just the quickest way to get
every
him.
Movie
He's
I've
already
seen,
going. They want him to go in that direction.
Every movie I've seen where someone gets let out of prison, they go to the front desk of that prison.
And they get their put out on the street.
One pocket knife, one quarter. You know, they give them their stuff. And
they
then
give
they
them
just
their
leave.
Pocketful
and
stuff.
Maybe there's like a taxi there.
Yeah.
But.
Maybe. Not if you're Ant-Man.
I don't know. I just.
Yeah, it's all wrong. But
the premise is bad.
The internet is not there, like, in wide use for the average moviegoer to be aware of any of this shit back then. Like, there's going to be the one or two people in the theater who are like,
what is this?
Or face-palming it, you know. But then again, it's your fault you came to see a movie like this in the first place.
You saw the cover of this. You saw Nick Cage on there.
Yeah, you saw a blonde, long-haired Nick Cage.
This is on you.
Yeah, it is.
He is fit, though. I'm just saying, like, in Ghost Rider, say what you want about Nick Cage. He's usually got a nice set of arms on.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's not as well... arranged in more recent movies that you see him in, but he's also like in
Did
his
you see
50s
the new Chris
now.
Hemsworth photo?
I heard about
where he's
it.
He's absolutely
I heard
jacked.
About it. Yeah.
Like he could play the Hulk now, Lou Ferrigno style. Huh. Like, good lord, he's huge.
Well, good for him.
I'm sure he's on roids, but still.
Yeah. Because you look at him in any movie that he's doing between a Marvel movie and he looks normal.
Right.
It's like, well, that's.
It's like to get that result in that amount of time.
Well, yeah, that's why they all did roids. In the day,
but that kind of makes me sick. I mean, I know Arnold did too, but like,
oh, it's in his book. Yeah, like
the problem, but for a body, it's not like a strength training thing. It's literally just how you look. Obviously, I feel like you should be able to do whatever you want to achieve that. But
yeah, like steroids can help you with gains initially, but kind of like if you're not using them, like those gains will plateau. That at that point, the steroids are just helping you shape.
But not to make this like a body image thing, but to make that like a standard of what like a fit male should look like. Is just bad, right? To have these like ballooned, like water deprived.
Oh, yeah, like
all
of the body type imagery that we associate with how you should want to look doesn't matter if you're man or woman. Like it's bad,
right?
And that's which is at least in this era, it's like that person's doing it, like taking it that far.
But I'm saying
on their own initiative. Like whereas if you're gonna be a Marvel character, like
you're on roll.
That's in the contract right. That you will look this way, you know.
Versus yeah. Like this, we have Nick Cage, who's just like really fit.
I wouldn't be surprised if Chris Hemsworth is like dead before his time, unless they've come up with steroids that don't kill you of heart failure like early. Because Arnold has had like multiple heart surgeries at this point. It's amazing he's made it to his 70s.
Well, you've only got so much. You only get to burn so much oxygen, and the more muscles you have, the more oxygen you burn. So
yeah. Yeah, steroids, they make your muscles bigger. They don't make your organs bigger.
No way to train your heart.
Nope.
In fact, a very healthy and strong heart's actually small.
Huh.
Because the heart gets lazier, it gets bigger, lazier. It gives more muscle around itself, and then it can't supply it, so it puts more muscles.
Well, now I'm paranoid. I want to know how big my heart is.
Basically, like, fails because it's, like, trying to build too much. Although, if you have, like, a genetically... I'm starting to hear the thing again. I'm losing sound.
Uh-oh. No, it's not true.
Because, like, my voice is going dead, and I'm just hearing the echo. So, you keep talking about Con Air, I'm going to make some switches.
Okay. Well, we get a, like, NCAA starting lineup style montage initially of the prisoners that are going to be on this flight.
Check.
We get some personalities. Like, again, everybody on this plane has a nickname. Kind of like, you know, nobody on this plane goes by Ben. They all have some kind of wackadoo name. Like there's Johnny 23. Good old Danny Trejo is on the flight. His thing is he likes to rape people.
I like that was fantastic. Classy putting that in.
You also have Pinball, who is a very young Dave Chappelle, who's in this movie. Random as all hell. Like, that was one of the things I remembered about this movie, even though he's a pretty minor part, and he's just there for laughs.
Integral part of their plan.
Oh.
Is they just light the guy next to him on fire.
They light the guy on fire. Dave Chappelle, you can tell he's improvising most of his lines here, because he's just doing Dave Chappelle stuff. Yeah. And he gets killed in the movie, but if they make it a humongous joke. Like, the way he dies and what they do after he dies, whew, it's...
The gear won't go.
I mean, like... Yeah. And the look on his face. Oh, man. Okay. But yeah, we're being given this rundown by John Cusack, who I don't know what he's doing in this movie. And I'm one of those that, like, I'm not a fan of his, but everything of his I've seen that he's in, I like. So I don't know. Maybe that makes me a fan. I don't know. But he's reading, or he's giving us the rundown opposite Chief O'Brien, who is like,
I can't take him seriously.
No, but he is. I can take him seriously.
Straight, but
he's playing it straight, but it's like so.
It doesn't land.
He is
well.
The world's biggest asshole in this movie, and at some point it stops being. Well, not at some point. Immediately it stops being funny, and
so
I just want
to get back to the teleporter room.
Now would be a good time, Mr. O'Brien. Oh my God!
It's been a long time since I've seen Next Gen. He's also in Deep Space Nine, I think.
Oh yeah, he carries over. He transfers along with Worf. Shows. Yeah, but he doesn't just do transporter things on DS9. I don't think.
He becomes like an officer of some type.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or
been a
maybe
long. He, been 15 years.
I can't.
At least
I can't picture not
Trek
calling
days.
Him Chief. But yeah. I didn't stick with DS9 for very long. To my sadness, I haven't gotten around to watching the series. Things started going. I think I became an X-Files boy at that point in my life. But we've got not all the prison guards on this plane have mustaches, just the main one. And well, I hate him, because he's doing his best to be like law enforcement asshole number one, even though Chief O'Brien's occupying that spot. Just unnecessarily abusive, but it's supposed to be funny, so yeah, whatever.
Well, I think with the amount of high-risk cons they have, I think they're allowed to beat on them a little bit.
Well, they're supposed to be picking up some more at the stop where, I guess, Cage was supposed to get off the plane. I can't...
Oh, that's not really... That's the part, the yellow Ferrari was kind of a joke for the last movie. The thing that bothers me the most about this one...
Oh, the Corvette?
It's not the Corvette.
Oh, no. The kick-ass, the ass-kicker Corvette.
No, this one's legit. This is a legit complaint. It's like if a father who wanted to see his daughter had the opportunity to get off that plane, they would take it.
Cusack beats that point to death. Like, hey, why didn't he get off this plane? Because this is what any normal...
Because his friend is there.
But Bubba Gump needs his
ends
insulin.
Ends up dying anyway at the end.
No, he doesn't die.
Oh, right. Yep. He gets shot.
He does get shot, but he's gut shot, which in the movies means
you're
not fine, but you will live. If you get hit in the arm, which Cage does get hit in this movie
but,
in the arm.
Batman style just walks right through this.
Well,
not
he
happening.
Doesn't react to it in this movie. He walks forward and the squib goes off on his like right beneath his left shoulder. And he doesn't react like in the movie.
They probably
sense,
just actually shot Nicolas Cage for that because
like even Arnold, when Arnold gets shot in the arm or shoulder, which was typical
with a plasma caster.
Well, when he gets hit with the plasma caster, number one, it doesn't bisect him like it does everything else it hits in the movie. It doesn't even take a chunk out of his arm, but it does blow him off his feet.
True.
Why do we keep talking about Predator?
Because Predator's one of the greatest movies ever made.
I'm glad to hear someone besides me say it. So yeah, we get some prisoners off the plane here, but we get some more brought on. There's two notables. One of them being Swamp Thing. I don't think we ever get the character's actual name like we do with most of the mainline prisoners. We get Ving Rhames and John Malkovich and stuff. But Swamp Thing is just really tall It's an actor named MC Gainey. He hasn't been in a whole lot over the course
of the
years.
I've seen him before, definitely.
But you've seen him before. Right. He's kind of a that guy in Hollywood. I love him, generally speaking, and I particularly love him in this movie. This part is perfect for him. But he, they get the pilot off of the plane, and he comes on board, and apparently he can fly planes, so that's what he's going to do.
And they dumped a transponder in a tour airplane, which I think is pretty funny.
Yeah, that's the longest running gag in the movie, I think, because they don't stick with the whole bunny thing. Like, it comes back at the end, but the bunny doesn't get enough scenes where the bunny in the box is a big gag. But the transponder Dave Chappelle puts in a flight tour plane gets dragged on for a considerable portion of the movie, and it is fucking funny. But the other person that comes on board at this this stopover, like, they are trying to, they're lampooning Hannibal Lecter, Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, I don't
here.
Think they actually do that to people.
No, but like, they don't even want you to think that you're, they don't want you for a moment to think, like, do they do this to people? They have him, like, super shackled to this rig that they're rolling him around on, and they have stuff on his arms and legs which can hook up to these, like, prods.
And then when he's out of the chair, it's just like his arms are like,
and
here.
He's got the thing over his face.
Of course,
which,
you gotta block their face.
Steve Buscemi is great here. He's playing a character named Garland Green, I think, who's a mass murderer.
Wore her head through three states as a hat.
He is great. He's so great. We're gonna go out on a high note here, and leave the rest for next time. Unlisted Wall is available on Amazon, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iTunes, anywhere else you get your podcast fix. We're on social media. We have a page on Facebook, and we're at WallUnlisted on Twitter.com if you want to interact with us there. We also do Twitch streams at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Friday nights.
Oh, that's Cold Steel 17 with a Colt at the beginning, like the gun, and then steel spelled incorrectly, and then 17, the numbers 1 and 7, just two clicks on the keyboard. We play games, mostly where Charles is put into some sort of danger, and then, like in Phasma, we'll sacrifice him to ghosts.
Bastards.
And we play Left 4 Dead right now, but that changes. We were playing Squadrons before. Sometimes we Valheim, except for Valheim's starting to lag under the pressure of
my hit
computer
a wall there.
Trying to run the server with all the people on it, but it's a good time.
Yeah, it's a hangout stream. We have fun. Check us out if you feel like it. Next time, we'll finish our discussion of Con Air, and from there, we'll go right into Face Off, where it's Cage and Travolta, but it's really Cage's movie, I think, for 85% of it. It should be a lot of fun for us, because we're gonna wrap our Nick Cage coverage at that point.
He plays the good guy and the bad guy.
Oh, maybe that's the gimmick of the movie. I wonder if they worked that into the title.
No, it's a sports title.
Until then, this has been Ben and Charles signing off.